Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. For today's webinar, we'll be covering the 2022 ESG trends, what renewable energy investors should know. Before we get started, I do have a disclaimer I have to read. The Entrust Group does not provide investment advice nor endorse any products. All information and materials are for educational purposes only. All parties are encouraged to consult with their attorneys, accountants, and financial advisors before entering into any type of investment. Today's agenda, first we'll learn a little about the Entrust Group and self-directed IRAs, and then we will meet Tyler and Mike from Energia, and they will cover what's trending in renewable energy, an overview of impact investing and ESG, how to identify a truly sustainable investment, and at the end, we will have time for questions and answers. My name is Tony Uncle. I'm the Business Development Manager at the Entrust Group. I have been with Entrust for 4 years, and we are passionate about educating investors and professionals on tax-preferred retirement accounts. If you're not familiar about Entrust, we are a self-directed IRA provider, custodian record keeper. We have $4 billion in assets under administration, over 45,000 investors empowered, 40 plus years in business, and we provide a one single point of contact model where, depending on your state of residency, you will have a single business development manager assigned to you to help you in all that you need. As I said, Entrust, we are self-directed IRA administrators, extremely knowledgeable staff, with many of them holding the CISP designation. We do have nationwide offices. We provide in-person events as well as virtual webinars. We have our biannual IRA Academy and also provide national continuing education program for other credentials. What is a self-directed IRA? Self-directed IRA is a retirement account in which the individual investor is solely in charge of making all investment decisions. Self-directed IRAs provide a greater opportunity for asset diversification outside of traditional stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. All securities and investments are held in a retirement account administered by a regulated custodian or trustee. From here, we'll turn it over to Michael and Tyler at Energia, and they will take you through ESG investing.
Hey, how's everyone doing today? This is Mike Silvestrini. I'm one of the co-founders and a managing partner here at Energia. We are an asset management firm who manages a number of portfolios of renewable energy projects on behalf of a wide range of investors, from private equity companies, listed trusts, and to retail investors as well. I've been in the renewable energy space for the last 12 years or so, or actually more than that, started in 2007, getting up there, have put to work over $600 million across 420 projects. Have been instrumental in opening markets up as far afield as Africa, Latin America, and was even an early entrepreneur in the domestic renewable energy industry. And I like to partner up with my team here, and we take a broad view of renewable energy opportunities, look globally for opportunities where yield can be greatest, and manage our investors' capital as we deploy it into ultra high yielding renewable energy assets.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Tyler Hurlbert. I'm the Director of Investor Relations here at Energia. My past life, I was a licensed, still am a licensed financial advisor, wealth manager, firms such as Prudential, TIAA, Ameriprise, really across the gamut, Wells Fargo. 20 years experience within the financial services industry, primarily in portfolio management, risk mitigation, as well as tax and estate planning. Graduated from the University of Connecticut undergrad, and then I got my MBA from St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. Want to take a quick second and just go through a little bit about Energia before we turn the mic back over to Mike to talk about the current state of just the energy market really in general and some trends happening there and how it's relevant to Energia and renewables in general. But Energia is an online platform that connects investors to renewable energy projects across the globe. So we're really kind of the middleman, bringing together project developers, investors, and then our broad knowledge of the industry and kind of as an asset manager to one place to really own these clean energy projects that earn long-term attractive carbon-free dividends. Just a quick year in review. It's been just about 18 months exactly since Energia started offering securities through Reg A, Regulation A Plus on our website, on our online platform. And in that time, you know, we've grown the company. Right now we manage just over $100 million in assets under management, as Mike mentioned, for, you know, institutional investors and retail investors alike. Currently have built or are building 31 projects across three continents, which equates to 91 megawatts of renewable energy under construction. We do have a 12.74% realized IRR on all projects and portfolios across the platform. I will say, you know, we're going to keep this webinar here very educational in nature. So specific questions about return profiles and projections for projects and portfolios, we'll have to take those offline, but feel free to email me, Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, at energia.com with any questions you might have. And we'll certainly save some time for questions at the end, but we're going to keep it very high level here for the purposes of today's discussion. One of the questions we get very regularly here on the Energia platform is when somebody logs in and creates an account and makes an investment with us, what exactly are you investing in, and how does that investment structure, portfolio structure look like? How does it work? So here you'll see we have, you know, on the left-hand side, retail investors. We also have Energia ourselves as a company. We invest in these projects right alongside our investors. And then the, you know, portfolios themselves. So we group these portfolios primarily based on geographical region. We come up with an investment thesis for each region and then invest in projects that adhere to that investment statement or thesis. So we have Community Solar in Brazil, Solarize Africa, and Solar in the US. And these portfolio level companies are all Delaware based LLCs. So you're investing in a US corporate entity, and those LLCs, those Delaware LLCs, the sole purpose of those companies are to own the portfolio's projects that are associated with that particular portfolio. So down in Brazil, you know, we've set up several single purpose entities to own projects in Brazil. Same thing in Africa and the US. Each month, those projects generate electricity. We collect revenue. We pay any operating expenses associated with those projects, and then we return 100% of the cash back to that Delaware holding company to distribute to the investors on a pro rata basis. So we're really trying to, and we'll get to this a little bit, I'll get to this a little bit later in the presentation, but, you know, when it comes to investing, and in particular, you know, any kind of sustainable or impact investing, you want to be as close to that project or portfolio of projects as you possibly can be. And we feel like with this portfolio structure, we've achieved that. You are direct equity owners of renewable energy projects around the world. Mike?
Yes. So let's take a look and maybe take a step back and try to make this as useful to this audience as we can be. Hopefully there's, you know, feel free to ask questions as well. But basically, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the energy market. Obviously, the war between Russia and the Ukraine has brought back to the limelight the national security issue that energy really represents. And a lot of us in the renewable energy space really got into this business originally on the basis of national security. And but it's not as simple as it may seem from the outset. And when you get into the deeper layers of ESG, whatever the heck that means, and, you know, carbon related vocabulary, it gets a little tricky. So let me just give you the lay of the land as we see it as practitioners in this asset class. And what's really going on, I think, from a neutral standpoint as we can, obviously energy is inherently political because it is such big and significantly important infrastructure. And if it were ever mismanaged, it would have a major impact on economic efficiency. So thus, you know, energy and politics, unfortunately, go somewhat hand in hand. And not only is it a highly politicized topic, but it's also an area of national security when we're doing business with places like Venezuela and Russia and Iran and Saudi Arabia, where we run the risk of not being able to select who we do business with based off of a common business objective, but instead based off of the geolocation of natural resources. So it can be a real challenging type of asset class to invest in, because there are these major drivers such as national security and political instability. So how does renewable energy play into this? Well, we're pretty sure that number one, when we talk about renewable energy, I'm really specifically speaking through the lens of solar energy, just to put that out there. Solar energy is the most scalable of the low carbon technologies. It's the fastest growing segment of the energy industry as a whole. And it's clearly going to be part of the future grid of the world. So really looking through that solar energy lens, we try to think to ourselves, how can solar energy have a positive political and national security impact? And how can our investments into this asset class encourage a desirable outcome? But here's where it gets a little bit trickier, you know, where the United States does not manufacture solar equipment. Solar equipment is manufactured in China. And therefore, every time we install a domestic solar energy asset, it increases trade deficit vis-a-vis those two countries. The United States has imposed tariffs, pretty substantial tariffs on importing solar equipment from not only China, but other Asian nations, up to about 60% increase in the cost of solar modules in this case. So here we start to see the national security issues start to creep in into the economics, even at a project level. In order to offset the impact on that tariff, the United States also offers a tax credit for installing solar, which really kind of mucks things up a little bit. Number one, the United States government is subsidizing its own tariff on the Chinese manufacturers, but also we wind up needing special types of financing called tax equity in order to transact in the domestic industry, whereas international markets don't have that extra wrinkle of paying a tariff and then seeking to monetize a tax credit, and making in those most markets now, solar energy is just the cheapest form of new kilowatt hours available. So yeah, we can just give you a sense there of how politicized and how affected this asset class can be by government policy and national security interests. And that's why when we take a look at this asset class, we want it to be involved in it, not only because of its low carbon characteristics, but also because it's long-term contracted, often double digits yield. And that is such a an exciting value proposition. It's so rare of a thing that we see in alternative asset classes now, that we want to be part of it, but we want to take advantage of this global purview, which is why Energia spends a lot of time looking at all markets and saying, where can we be most competitive as American investors, who our clients are? In most cases, we do manage a fund on behalf of a UK listed trust, but most of our customers are domestic. And you know, where do we have a competitive advantage? And that's why we look to emerging markets. We look at places like Brazil, which has been really one of the most effective and lucrative renewable energy markets in all of the world. And it's a place where, you know, we don't have the tariffs and where you know, our type of capital is welcomed, and we can really do well in that market currently. But we also do projects in the United States and deal with the geopolitics. So just wanted to give the broad sense that markets are shifting. There is a demand for more renewable energy on one hand to avoid the business as usual customers from whom we source much of our fossil fuels from, but it's a double-edged sword because that basically shifts us to a trade deficit scenario with China. Unfortunately, the United States has not been able to materialize a domestic manufacturing capacity despite the tariffs. You know, it's hard enough for, I think, the United States to field service-related jobs, let alone manufacturing jobs right now. And the tariffs have done little to promote a domestic capacity. So that's really the nature of the beast right now. It's a very complex space, but also a huge opportunity to cash in on what appears to be a movement, an energy transition towards things like solar energy. Ty, you want to talk about inflation?
Yeah, sure. I'll talk a little bit about inflation. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, one of the nice things about renewable energy projects or, you know, a lot of energy contracts, you know, you look at utilities, you know, any utility stock, whether it be oil, gas, natural gas, or renewable energy, when inflation is on the rise, there tends to be this, gravitation towards, steady, consistent yielding, real asset type investments. So, you know, we saw here in the U.S. The inflation rate jump from up to 7% in 2021, the highest jump in nearly four decades, and it's only continued to go up. I just saw an article this morning that, you know, we're hovering, the CPI is hovering at around 8.5% now. So that trend has continued as we've gone into the beginning part of 2022. The core price index, which just excludes food and energy, rose by almost 5% last year, which is the highest jump since 1983. So again, you know, when we're in these hyperinflationary periods, investors tend to gravitate towards alternative investments, real estate, renewable energy, infrastructure, farmland, you know, essentially real assets, gold, silver. And energy as contracts, just like, you know, many electricity contracts or energy contracts, start with a fixed price of electricity and then are adjusted annually for inflation. So if we continue to see inflation, rear its head, we are in a very unique position to capture the upside of that inflation just through the way our energy contracts are structured. Mike, I don't know if you had anything else to say on inflation.
No, I think that's the important thing. We don't really know. We were seeing sevens last year. How long is that going to last? Are we letting a little bit of air out of the balloon from the quantitative easing during COVID? Or is this, you know, the beginning of a change of the value of the world's reserve currency? We take a position that we don't know. So diversification is the best policy. We hold multiple currencies in the portfolios and products we offer our customers so that if the dollar is strong, you know, we will benefit from that. If the dollar gets clobbered, we have upsides there as well. So we really look at inflation as and the resulting impact on foreign exchange rates and try to place our bets accordingly.
Yeah. And one of the trends that we're seeing develop here within the renewable energy market in particular around the globe that we're just really tuned into is this idea of distributed generation or community solar. And if you go back a few slides, you'll remember we have a portfolio in Brazil called specifically community solar in Brazil. So I know Mike wanted to share and talk a little bit here on these next couple slides, specifically around distributed generation and community solar and why we like it so much.
Yeah, exactly. So distributed generation is really one of three categories for renewable energy. You have the residential scale, which we do not personally invest in. There is utility scale stuff. That's the really big plants. We also don't invest in those. There are cheaper forms of capital like pension funds and that can go directly into those assets. And there's not a lot of money to be made in the ultra large renewable energy asset class. Where we find the porridge to be the right temperature is sort of in the middle, when we can do business directly with large credible customers. We've done business with Walmart, with Amazon, with large telecommunications companies, with schools and universities, and many of the types of customers that build up a good credit book. And we can do that from this sort of middle segment. community solar is basically building a solar asset. We buy land, we can put a solar asset directly on that land, and then we can use the grid to deliver electricity to a number of different customers who are not directly connected to the plant. We pay the utility company for its transmission and distribution services and collect revenue directly from our customers. We really think that that is a setup that we're going to see more and more frequently around the world. We already do that in Brazil, where we have thousands of customers that range from, you know, bakeries on the corner to you know, large grocery chains, all being provided electricity from mid-sized solar plants that are nearby. And we're going to see that happen now in South Africa. And we even see a major community solar effort here in the United States. So there is an increase of that policy, and distributed generation really is, in our estimate, the best of both worlds, where it's big enough and scaled enough to not be dealing with, you know, your residential scale problems, but small enough to still have to be under the radar of institutional investors, where we can have more exciting returns.
Great. So I'm going to talk a little bit about ESG and impact investing. And, it, you know, ESG is a term that, you know, quite honestly, between you, me, and the lamppost and the, you know, folks on this webinar, I'm not sure what it means anymore. It's kind of gotten run through the marketing gamut. There's a lot of greenwashing and kind of claims of ESG, and it's you know, you look under the hood and you see an investment and you're like, man, is that really what I signed up for? So we're going to talk about I guess more impact investing and how to really identify the pitfalls of a quote unquote, you know, ESG investment, and how to find truly sustainable impact investments out there. And this is a quote from BlackRock's CEO Larry Fink, which just, you know, kind of goes into, you know, today we're on the cusp of another transformation. Better technology and data are enabling asset managers to offer customized indexed portfolios to a much broader group of people. Another capability once reserved just for the largest investors. As more investors choose to tilt their investments towards sustainability-focused companies, the tectonic shift we are seeing will accelerate further. So there's clearly this trend happening, whatever you want to label it or call it, where investors, both, you know, large institutional investors and retail investors, are starting to at least try to measure both the financial returns of an investment and the impact it has on local communities, the environment, you know, or the supply chain, whatever is important to them. So first definition.
I would just add national security to the host of features that we look for in investments these days.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what is just kind of quick definition of ESG for those that may not know exactly what it means? Maybe they've heard of it. It stands for environmental, social, and governance. So how a company interacts with its physical environment, how they kind of impact the communities they serve, and how the company is governed, how they treat employees, supply chain, you know, kind of other key stakeholders within the business. It's a $20 trillion market right now. So whether you love ESG or think it's a total sham, it is absolutely here to stay. And you know, we'll continue to see kind of further regulation, I think, in that space. But again, the focus of my presentation today is really just to kind of, you know, what to look for when making these kinds of investments. So Ken, we feel, and I feel, you know, hey, this is a step in the right direction, but many, including myself, are calling for stricter regulations on how and when that ESG label can be used. So this next slide is an interesting one. You know, you're going to see some of the absolute behemoths of the U.S. market here, companies that everyone recognizes the name, recognizes their symbol. And what's interesting about this is that, again, these are some of the largest companies in the United States. What they also have in common is they are all part of the top 10 holdings for Vanguard's, you know, one of Vanguard's ESG funds. So You know, when I look at these companies collectively, I don't get an overwhelming sense of ESG, or it's not a particularly feel good story when I look at these companies as a whole. So I think this is really a visual definition of why the ESG label, or what the problem with it is. You know, right? Why has it been dragged through the mud so much? Is that, you know, there's really no rhyme or reason on what qualifies or seems to qualify for ESG. So again, clearly there's more work to be done here when it comes to impact investing or socially responsible investing, and how we label that, what we call it. You know, many of you on this call may have heard of greenwashing, but it's basically just the process of conveying a false impression or providing misleading information about how a company's products are more environmentally sound. And again, you know, I would go as far to say, you know, calling this collection of companies an ESG fund would certainly probably fall into that moniker for me. You know, one of the things you can do, you know, with ESG and evaluating an ESG investment or a socially responsible investment in general, is to try to avoid the best-in-class approach. So there's this idea that you know, we can have BP in an ESG fund because they're doing more than ExxonMobil is to promote social causes or environmental causes. So it's kind of, you know, the best of the bunch, but it's really not a true ESG investment. You know, a much better approach would be to take an approach where you're excluding particular sectors. So there's this exclusionary approach where you might say, hey, I want to avoid oil and gas or natural gas altogether. I want to avoid, you know, firearm manufacturers. I want to avoid, you know, big tobacco, you know, whatever the industry you want to avoid. You can kind of take this exclusionary approach when building your portfolio. Regulators are really beginning to crack down hard on this ESG label. Investors are demanding more and more transparency. And I think that's just it, right? The more transparency we get, and we seek to be as transparent as we possibly can here at Energia, if there's any questions you have about, you know, our products, you know, the investment opportunities here, how we calculate returns, you know, we're an open book. But transparency and access to data really will provide a large role in exposing the true investments that are socially responsible from the imposters. So again, just to kind of continue that thought, you know, we are cracking down. You know, there's a kind of a global, you know, demand to kind of crack down on this label of ESG. The EU has taken the first step towards regulation with their new sustainability financial disclosure regulation. And really, again, increased disclosure and transparency requirements, really forcing fund managers, mutual fund managers, to report on key sustainability metrics. The SEC has followed suit, and in March of last year, created a task force around evaluating climate and ESG issues related to investing. And then there's a link here, and I'm sure Andrew can send out this presentation to anyone who's interested, or let us know in the chat or in the questions here, and we'll get you this. But they issued a risk alert white paper back in April of 2021, outlining some of those inconsistencies with how ESG is defined and reported on amongst financial managers. So how do we cut through all this noise and get to a true impact investment, which I think, you know, is a much better term for this, right? You know, how can I make an investment that has strong financial returns and performance metrics, but also is going to have a positive impact on the environment, the communities in which we serve, the world at large in general? One thing to generally avoid is passive investments. So, you know, think index funds, ETFs. Again, you know, from an exclusionary approach, passive investments are going to group a whole lot of companies together. And, you know, you're benefiting from that diversification, but it's also very difficult to go in and, you know, out of, you know, 30 or 40 companies that a fund might be invested in, pick three or four and say, hey, I don't want to invest in those particular companies. So you want to avoid passive investments and maybe look towards building your own portfolio of companies or private investments such as Energia. or active management. Think low carbon is one that you can search for. If you work with a financial advisor, a mutual fund manager, a lot of them have low carbon or no carbon, zero carbon type funds. Those are always a good starting point. Again, true impact investing requires, again, more active management and research. I always look at it and go back to that slide we just had here a couple of slides ago. Does it pass the smell test? You know, do you look at the top 10 holdings of a company? Did these names elicit a sense of environmental stewardship in ESG? So again, you know, that's the first thing you can do. And then get as close as you can. So, you know, really try to get as close as you can to the end product, whether it's an investment manager, mutual fund. With Energia, you're owning direct equity shares, as I mentioned earlier, in renewable energy projects around the world. That's about as close as you can get. Know what's important to you. When you're taking that exclusionary approach, that might be different for everyone. You know, some people might want to really focus on the social aspect of it and the communities in which these companies operate, local companies to them. Some people may find the environmental aspect much more interesting, or the governance of the company. So what's important to you, know what's important to you, and look for that. And when you're looking for that, places that you can find that are really any publicly traded company is going to have, prospectuses, annual reports. A lot of them will publish sustainability reports now. I would say, you know, you want to take those, some of those with a grain of sand, but certainly the prospectus annual report, look at the top 10 holdings of a fund. I've included a couple links here as well, just to get into through the EDGAR system. You can actually pull up specific companies, and a lot of those reports there, annual reports and prospectuses, will be, you know, kind of filed and documented there. And MSCI has a really nice, easy to read, easy to follow corporate ESG ratings search tool. So, you know, and a lot of the companies, I was on there the other night playing around with it, and, you know, solar manufacturing companies that are very low on the ESG scale. So they measure a lot of different factors that we talked about earlier, but, you know, that's a good place to start as well. So in closing, we're going to take as much time as we need to here with questions. So if you do have any questions, please feel free to, drop those in the chat, or Andrew and or Tony can handle some questions at the end for us. But feel free, I would encourage each of you, if you have any interest in renewable energy investments and how, you know, these can kind of add some true diversification to your portfolio, please stay in touch with us. Visit us at energia.com. Again, my email address is just tyler@energia.com. There's my phone number there. So if you want to take a quick screen grab of that, or jot those, you know, that contact information down, we'd love to stay in touch with you and let you know a little bit more about how these investments can provide not only steady returns, but a nice impact and true diversification in a market that's a little bit overheated at this point, I might say. So. Tony, I don't know if you have any questions handy or how we want to handle questions.
Thanks, guys. Up next on the Entrust webinar schedule is Property Technology Shaping the Future of Real Estate Investments. You can register today and join us on May 25th. If you like to learn something new, please drop us a line in the survey as you leave. Any more information on self-directed IRAs and what you can and cannot use them for, please visit our website, theentrustgroup.com, and navigate your way to the Learning Center. And don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms as well. We will open up for questions. There is a question panel. Feel free to type anything in and we can address as many as possible. All right, nobody has any questions. So we would thank everybody for joining us. Copies of the webinar will be sent to all attendees and will be available in the Learning Center as well. Thank Energia for joining us. Go ahead.
I got a question just popped in here. I don't know if I can. I can't really read it.
Oh, I got it. 1 second. It's for you guys. Is there any plan for a fund that would cover several U.S. investments?
We have an open fund for U.S. projects on our platform. It currently owns a few projects in the Northeast, and we are buying a portfolio of assets in the California market. And it's an open-ended fund, and we hope to continue to make more investments into projects that meet our risk-adjusted return hurdle rates for that portfolio. So by all means, head over to energia.com and take a look at the Solarize, the Solar in the USA portfolio.
Thanks, Mike.
You bet.
Keep it open a couple of more minutes if anybody else has any additional questions.
Yeah, I mean, while we're waiting, Tony, for a couple other questions, hopefully to pop in, feel free again to drop those questions in the chat. You know, one of the questions we get a lot on the platform is just around the liquidity of the investment. And, you know, we're constantly trying to make the product more liquid. Obviously, solar projects are inherently illiquid investments by nature. So just like a lot of alternative investments are. So we do require that you hold the shares with us for a minimum of 3 years at this point. And we're actually in the process of taking that down to 12 months. So the way that these are taxed, which is another question we get a lot, is they're through 1099. So it's a 1099 DIV that we would issue each year. They're qualified dividends, which is a tax advantaged form of dividends. We're looking to at least have you hold the shares long term for probably 12 months just to avoid short term capital gains. That's a question that we get fairly regularly. Doesn't look like there's any other questions. So if anyone wants to keep in touch or does have questions that they want to ask offline, feel free to reach out to me directly, Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, at energia.com. Phone number is listed there on the screen. And thank you all for your time.
Thanks, all.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you, everybody.